from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitine.
Yep, it is Fresh Fridays here on the G and Ursula Show. Ursula is out today. Spike O'Neill is filling in for Ursula. Good morning to you, Spike.
Good morning, G. And I got to say, Ursula, got to be the smartest woman I've ever met in my life. Look at the weather. Look when you take your personal days. When I take personal days, it is like the monsoon season hits. Lightning strikes her everywhere. Fires start in eastern Washington. Ursula gets the perfect northwest weather.
She does. She does.
I'm so glad.
Ursula, if you're listening, we miss you. Just want you to know that.
Amen.
Are we paying the price for people being less social? We talk about that at 10:30. But right now, one of my favorite times of the week is when our good friend Michael Medved joins the show. Michael Medved from his talk show, Michael Medved Show on KTTH. Good morning, Michael.
Hey, good morning, G, and good morning, Spike.
Good morning, Michael.
All right, Michael, I'm going to set the tone for this discussion. The Republican Party, which one are they going to choose, Donald Trump or the United States of America?
Well, I think it's a real question right now, and I think they will make the right choice and are in the process of doing so. Look, the more that comes out about the so-called raid, and it wasn't a raid, it was an authorized legal search of President Trump's home. And when you look at the background, and you look at the Washington Post this morning, that it was really about nuclear weapons. I mean, this is a serious matter. And I just think the sheer volume of cases against Trump, the big story this week that hasn't gotten enough attention, is the courts decided that he has to turn over his tax returns. It's actually the IRS is going to be providing his tax returns directly to the House Oversight Committee. And there's so much going on with him right now. The case in Georgia where he hired a super attorney called the billion-dollar lawyer who has previously been very critical of Trump and has been the main lawyer for Cardi B and leading rap stars. And when you have President Trump dueling so many different investigations and charges against him, I think it's going to bring him down.
Yeah. Michael, if I may, can the Republican Party make the right choice with the powerful voices within the party like Steve Scalise, like Kevin McCarthy, and even the most, I hate to say it, but the most monetary valuable voices like Marjorie Taylor Greene coming out and just decimating the reputation and the credibility of institutions like the DOJ and the FBI?
No, look, I think that Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz and Paul Gosar and Scott Perry and all of these other crazies who are part of the Stop the Steal movement, who believe it was a stolen election, do I believe that they are bringing down the whole conservative movement and the Republican Party? Yes, I do. Do I think they're going to ultimately destroy it as a viable political institution? No, I don't. But I do think what we're going to have now is that anyone who thinks that this election is going to be an overwhelming Republican landslide. Well, we still have a couple of months, but it doesn't look that way. It looks to me like a very close competitive election. And I don't really think that the voters over in Clark County and thereabouts are going to go for Joe Kent, for instance. I think all of a sudden the Democrats have a competitive chance in that because people not enough Republicans voted for Jamie Herrera Butler, and now you're sort of stuck with Joe Kent, who's a conspiracy theory guy.
Hey, Michael, I want to take this time because give us something good that you are proud of when it comes to the Republican Party right now. What are you proud of?
Sure, right now. The fact that there were a bunch of Republicans on a number of things that were passed actually to allow the veterans to recover from the burn pits that they were exposed to in the Middle East. The very modest and moderate and sensible gun control reform that was Okay, basically, your point is very well made. It's tough. In terms of the Republican Party as a party, it's tough to do this. I mean, they voted down in Wisconsin, there was a very crazy guy who was running for the state legislature to replace the speaker, Robin Voss of the state legislature in Wisconsin. And his opponent pledged that he would fight to make all contraception illegal. He lost in the primary. That's a good thing. So, look, there's all kinds of stuff. If you look at some of the voices in the Republican Party, Ilhan Omar, by the way, almost lost. He had a very close race in the Democratic primary in Minnesota. So Democrats have their own problems, but anyone who looks at the Republican Party and says that there isn't a problem right now with some irresponsible members being given too much attention and wielding too much influence, I think that's true.
Michael, what about, and I respect everything you're saying, and I respect you and your point of view. I know you give your honest and authentic reaction to tough questions, and I appreciate that. But with guys like it's easy to point to Marjorie Taylor Greene and Gosar and the various fringe element of the Republican Party. But Kevin McCarthy has the possibility of becoming a pretty good one, the Speaker of the House. When these guys come and rally around Trump the next morning after the Mar-a-Lago Monday night, and not just McCarthy, so many prominent, powerful Republicans rallied around Trump so quickly. Was that a mistake to be so quick to jump to his side of the boat?
Without question. Sure, of course it was. And I'll tell you what else was a mistake, and that disturbed me greatly, is to have Kevin McCarthy. He tweeted to Merrick Garland, I want you to save your records and clear your calendar, yeah, as if the American people want to go through yet another round of another committee investigating wrongdoing on another side. Surely the people in the Congress, both Republicans and Democrats, have better things to do than that.
But isn't that exactly what a large portion of American voters want? There is such a contingent within the party, the Republican Party, that wants vengeance, that wants retribution.
Yeah, but I don't think it's a majority.
I don't either.
First of all, most Americans don't pay attention to it. Most Americans pay attention to the price of gas, which very fortunately has gone down below $4.
Yeah, you're right.
And nationwide. And I mean, when I got gas at Costco this week, it was $4.59, which was down. And look, the idea that right now you have the two parties, each one treating the other as if it were a mortal enemy, not just opponents, the desire to find common ground, the desire for a new party, by the way, there's a Pew Research study that shows that the majority of Americans would like to have a viable third party alternative somewhere between these two parties. That's not going to happen this time. It's not going to happen anytime soon. But I think both parties are going to have to change.
Michael, it's interesting. In the 9 o'clock hour, what you just said about most of Americans don't pay attention. They're just paying attention to a price of gas. I just said that. I just talked about what the majority of people care about.
Well, you're right. You're right.
I want to go. I'm going to go into this because, Michael, the thing that I love about talking to you is that, first of all, you're a historian. You can give off all the history and what's happened. So I really respect your opinion on these things. But I want to go into what's happening right now, current day. And sources told the Washington Post, let's go into that the FBI agent at Trump's house in Florida were looking for classified documents relating to nuclear weapons. Now, right now, we are waiting to see if Trump is going to release that search warrant. He has until noon today, our time, to do that. Did Merrick Garland call Donald Trump's bluff?
Yeah, I think to some extent he did. I mean, my understanding now is that Trump is not going to object, so that at noon today, they will release the search warrant because Trump is not offering any objection. And the real question is, why didn't he release it right away?
Exactly.
If this whole thing was supposed to be such a nightmare, such an abuse of the FBI, this is craziness. I mean, here's the interesting thing. Today I'm speaking to John Bolton on my radio show, the former National Security Advisor, and it was just revealed that the Iranians put a $300,000 price on his head. They were offering that kind of money for anybody who would kill him. And he was protected not by the Secret Service, not by the White House. He was protected by the FBI that came to him, managed through their work to save his life. Now, I know there are people out there who would like to see John Bolton get shot, but this is what we do in America. What happened to Salman Rushdie today? I don't like this novel. I don't enjoy reading Salman Rushdie, but my God, he got stabbed in the neck here in the United States. And protecting us against organized crime, protecting us against the Ku Klux Klan. Actually, the FBI has lots of dark chapters in its history. One of its most positive chapters is breaking up the Klan and really suppressing some of their violence back in the 60s and 70s. And the idea of treating the FBI as an enemy is so sick. And the idea that, particularly for a party like the Republicans, we're supposed to be tough on crime. We're supposed to be the law and order party. How do you function as a law and order party when one of your main targets that you are treating with hatred and contempt is law enforcement?
Same can be said about the media. For the longest time, the media was some call it the fourth branch of government. But that was attacked right out of the gates and continues to be to this day.
Well, again, and it's a problem, and it's particularly wrong right now because the media are highly varied. There isn't one single voice. I mean, I hate to remind people, but Fox News is still the leading cable that does very well. You're not forced. Side and state controlled media. Well, so much that was coming from Trump. Trump was getting so much more attention than anyone on the Democratic side. They, for every 10 Trump speeches that they televised live during the campaign of 2016, they televised one speech by Hillary Clinton because the Trump speeches were entertainingly crazy.
Yeah. Michael, whatever you're doing right now, don't move. Stay in that spot, because the spot that you're in right now, I can hear your cell phone sounds yeah. good. So don't move. Stay right there. But I also want to ask about this. And this is the part where, look, you do a show, we do a show, and every single day you have people that agree and disagree with us, and you don't know what you're talking about. And I got to tell you, I am fine with getting text messages from people saying that you don't know what you're talking about and I don't agree with you. Because I would rather you do that than show up to an FBI building with a threat towards the FBI and you lose your life. So here's my question for you. There are people like you, myself, and other media members in this country. What responsibility do we have when possibly we let this rhetoric out there, we bash the FBI, and then we have citizens possibly go to the FBI as a threat and then lose their life? What responsibility do we bear in that?
It's a great question. And I do believe we bear some. Because the point is, everyone in media at one level or another wants to be fair, I think. I mean, look, there's some hucksters, there's Tucker Carlson, there's people like that, where I don't think there's any attempt even to be fair. But for most people in the media, you want to be fair, but when it comes to issues like this, and this goes to this question of responsibility that you're asking, G, is that when it comes to talking about making war on the FBI, you can't treat that with fairness and even-handedness. That is evil. That is unpatriotic. And by the way, it may be criminal. And
Well, I think we finally lost Michael. We were rocking. He was going good right there. He got the cell phone. As we wait for him to come back, and again, by the way, Spike, there are times that Michael Medved and I, we disagree on things, and I'm okay with that.
Of course.
But I think a line has to be drawn when there are threats and things happening towards the FBI. Like he said, I remember the Republican Party of the two was more so about law and order, more so about back the blue than the Democratic Party. And then now we have this happen, and directly after the bashing of the FBI, directly after the, quote, defunding of the FBI, we have someone go who's from Columbus, Ohio, which is where my son is in Columbus, Ohio. This person leaves and goes to Cincinnati, puts a threat on the FBI, and he loses his life. Why is he dead today, Spike?
Because he was.
Why is this person dead today?
Because he was fed a story that the tyrannical government is all conspiring to get the man that he believes represents and speaks to him. He was fed that story. And it was supported by not just from the top, but all the way down that media food chain.
So,
and it was up to him to stand up. That's what he was fed.
So like I say, we can all, and I try my best because I really appreciate everyone. Even if you are a Trump supporter, no, man, I still rock with you. But you can be a Trump supporter. Let me say this really clear so he can hear this. You can be a Trump supporter and not go out there and threaten to harm someone. And not go out there and try to go to the FBI building. Does that make sense?
That's like, kind of all you're supposed to be able to do is peacefully protest. But the guy in Ohio yesterday, for great example, he wrote in his social media posts, peaceful protests aren't enough. I mean, that's the point that this element, and Michael's right, it's not a majority, it's a fringe, but it's a dangerous fringe.
And for everybody that wants to tell and try to talk to me about history of the FBI, I'm a black man in America. You think I don't know the history? You think I don't know about J. Edgar Hoover? You think I don't know about the man that called Dr. Martin Luther King a terrorist? He said that he was the most dangerous man in America? Don't talk to me about not knowing the history of the FBI. But at the same time, you're not going to see me personally get on social media and say defund the FBI. As a matter of fact, you've never even seen me say defund the police. You don't see that kind of rhetoric. And I'm not going to offer that rhetoric right now because to me, people and human decency come before my paycheck. And if it was all about paycheck for me, and if I really wanted to go out there tomorrow and make $500,000 a year, then I could easily go on some other talking points and easily fill my bank account. All right. Coming up next. Is social media hurting us? Are we becoming less social? We discuss that next. Gian Ursula with Spike O'Neill. The G and Ursula Show. Spike O'Neill is in for Ursula today. I got to tell you, Nick, you're in a good mood today, man.
He's playing the jam, brother.
You got an old soul. Hey, by the way, Spike, earlier when you were explaining, and by the way, your words, not mine, when you were explaining what'd you call it? White man dance?
White daddy dance.
White daddy
dance. That's a whole different element from the white man dance to the white daddy dance. You have to limit the motions by another 30-35%. Do the white daddy dance.
Hey, somebody text in and said, does it mean the biting of the lip?
Oh, yeah, you got to bite the bottom lip. You know, Yeah.
Get with your naughty self.
Yeah. If it's okay with mom.
Oh, of course.
You know, all daddy decisions are run through the mom filter.
Yeah. Hey, we do have scenarios that comes up next, but here's the question. Are we paying the price for people being less social? There's an author named Jeffrey Hall. He is a professor of communication studies and director of the Relations and Technology Lab at the University of Kansas. He wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal that says that all over the world and for decades, people have been embracing their interior lives more and interacting less, and they are doing this by choice. He says that the data shows, and it found out, that the time people spent talking to other people, both inside the home and outside of it, has been in decline for nearly 30 years. Telephone, video calls haven't made up for that loss. He says that people are exhausting. Humans have an innate desire to conserve our energy in social interactions, and interacting with others takes work. It's tiring to act in a certain way for the benefit of others. Sometimes people have disagreeable opinions or talk about uninteresting things. When given a choice, people often prefer to just not deal with all of that. But Hall says that with fewer people around and fewer opportunities for conversation, we have become less willing to see one another's point of view, and that the societal shift towards this also may justify putting less effort into caring for each other. Spike, when you hear that, your thoughts?
I should give you some background. I was raised by bar owners in the city of Baltimore. My parents owned the neighborhood tavern, okay, and I was a bartender on my 18th birthday and every day until I got into radio. And I can tell you that the conversations you have with friends or total strangers at a bar, and this is true across all of our lives, whether it's a grocery store, whether it's at a ball game, whether it's whatever, at Seafair, you meet different people, you hear their point of view, and you engage, you make eye contact. I'm a very social animal being raised in a bar. And when you don't have that, when you don't have opposing viewpoints, you do silo in, man. You get inside your own head, and we all love the reinforcement of things we already believe. I think it's called cognitive dissonance. One of the reasons we're all so tribal and dug into our belief system is we're feeding ourselves stuff we already know, stuff we already believe, because it reaffirms our sense of security, uh-huh, of our sense of self-worth and intelligence. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are just psychological and, you know, medical and scientific facts about who we are and how we process our lives and the information that we get in. That being said, we have all turned to look at our phone. The pandemic kept us from meeting new people. It is a dangerous thing. Anybody that lives in their own head, that's not a safe place to be. You need other people. And it can't just be your family. It really can't, because family interaction is great. But meeting people that you normally wouldn't converse with, meeting people that normally whose opinion you wouldn't care about or even value, finding those people and having them giving you their slice of life, we're incomplete without it.
Let me tell you a true story, and you can vet this story if you want to. The first time I met you, first day I met you, I never heard of Spike O'Neill. Everybody says, I keep seeing the text messages, and everybody talked about, oh my goodness, I remember you from, was it Bob Rivers? Is that right?
The Bob Rivers Show was on the air for 25 years across three stations.
Yeah. Absolutely. Everybody has known of Spike O'Neill. I had never heard of you. So you and I did the show together. It was great. You filled in and we were talking and we did the show. And right away with me, I didn't need to learn about you from others. I didn't need to do an extensive background check on you. It took me 5 minutes to understand what you were about. After the show, I went into the boss's office and I said, hey, this guy needs to be on radio.
Dude,
you can vet that story if you want to. Now, the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I noticed that people that are just, you can feel like they just have a lot of life in them, have one thing in common. They've been outside of their zip code. You see, a lot of times, when people have this this idea of how life is, usually you haven't been outside of your zip code. A lot of people have these narrow views because they haven't been outside of it. And I have been so blessed, so fortunate. Now, it wasn't good at the time when I got kicked out of school when I was, you know, and I had to go to military school in sixth grade. You think I loved that at first? Nah. Not really. Imagine being 11 years old and going to military school and leaving your family, leaving your friends at 11. But what I thought was awful at the time, to this day, I think it's the greatest thing that my parents have ever done. Here I am sleeping in a barracks with people from different backgrounds, different cultures, religions, ethnicities, going to sleep, eating breakfast, going to parades, preparing for inspection, team building. And guess what? If this person next to me does bad, we all do bad. And having that experience right away has really blessed my life and been able to get me, I believe, is the real core to my life. And so what I'm saying is in this story, I love that it's bringing it up because I believe that the social media, all the different channels. Remember when we were younger, Spike? Remember there was only like three channels?
Yep.
And when you went to school, no matter if you know this person or not, you guys were watching the same things, right?
Yep.
We were watching this. Today, everybody is watching what they want to watch in their own bubble. And so it does not help you get outside of your zip code or out of your comfort level. So I truly believe that the more technology that we have, the more social media that we have, the more it gives us a chance to isolate in our own bubbles, which I think is absolutely terrible for the world. And life is best lived when you are meeting people outside of your zip code, outside of your comfort, outside of your bubble, outside of your family. I tell this all the time, and I got to repeat it again. Every single day that I get to do this show for 3 hours, I get to get text messages from people that I've never met. I learn about you. I learn about your families. And so imagine that and multiply that a month, 2 months, 1 year, 2 years. It's literally, Spike, like I'm going to school every single day.
You learn, man. I one of the things I like to say during Cairo Nights, we're on from 7 to 10. Is that I don't know everything. I don't pretend to know everything. I'm wrong more often than I'm right, and I appreciate getting corrected. I don't mind at all opposing viewpoints. I just ask for civility. You know, that's kind of like what's missing in this world. I think you got that from your experiences in your life. I had no idea you got sent off to military school. Makes perfect sense now, though. Can you imagine the only thing worse than being sent off as a little kid to somewhere totally strange, people you didn't know, a new life? The only thing worse than that was be you getting kicked out of school and nobody cared, and you were just left to, okay, good luck out there, little man. If you don't value education, I got no time for you. I am so glad you weren't in a family, in a home that chose that. Far too often, that's what happens. I'm so glad you got sent off.
I was in a library, and it had the first 100 years of Howe Military School is the name of the military school I went to in Indiana. In the first 100 years of Howe Military, it was established in 1884, and it was the first 100 years, and I'm reading it, and I'm like, wait a minute. There's no black battalion commanders. There was never a black battalion commander. The battalion commander is the leading, highest-ranking cadet on at the school. And so I went to my tactical officer, Major Sheldon. I said, hey, there's never been a black battalion commander. He says, well, Scott, maybe you could be the first.
Oh.
And you know what? That was my goal, baby. 1994, I was the battalion commander.
Dude. Oh,
I had I had to let that flex go. All right, coming up next, we do scenarios. It's Gene Ursula. What's up, everybody? It is the G and Ursula Show. Spike O'Neill fills in for Ursula. And Spike, just so you know, I posted a picture of me as battalion commander on the G and Ursula Facebook page.
That's a fine-looking young man. And as a man who's raised daughters, we never had anybody. And nobody like that showed up at our door. Never. And then I got to tell you, nobody that well put together.
All right. Well, sure. Let's get to the scenarios.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
My 16-year-old daughter drives a used car that's in pretty good shape, but last week it needed to go in for service. By the way, Spike, you're going to really help out with this topic. So instead of sending her in, the car in, I traded cars with her to make sure the service department didn't try to rip her off. When I picked up the car, I drove through a fast food place, and while waiting for an order, decided to check out what was in her glove box. I know I probably shouldn't, but I did. I found a pack of condoms. She has no boyfriend, at least that I know of, and this has me really concerned. Now I don't know if she's having sex or what. I can't really talk to my wife about it because I know she'd overreact. It really has none of my business, and I should not even been snooping in the car, but then I bought the car. It's in my name. I pay for gas and service. She drives it. But still, if I confronted her or just talked to her, she would think it was a violation of her privacy, and it kind of is. I'm kind of stuck here and could sure use some advice on what to do next. 888-973-5476 is the State Roofing text line. Spike, you're up the bat first.
I had to tell you I had raised daughters, didn't I? I had to give that up.
You did?
You know what? Here's the story. You're the dad. She's the daughter. End of story. Next? No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. You know what? I think, first off, you just got the gift of a lifetime. That your daughter, first off, if you were trying to raise America's last virgin, I apologize. It wasn't going to happen. But your daughter has shown responsibility in the fact that she, all kids, by the way, are active. All kids are sexually active. It's just, that's how the species was designed, you know? It's nothing you did at home. It's not that stuff on your TV set. It's not even stuff coming through her phone. That goes back millions of years. The fact that your daughter has shown the responsibility to know if something happens, and I'm kind of glad she doesn't have a steady boyfriend. Then she would have had to go to Costco to get enough condoms, and there wouldn't be enough room in her glove box. The fact that she isn't really seeing anybody special, or, you know, but she was ready. Should that moment overtake her? Should the moment of excitement and desire, I'm talking about a 16-year-old kid, be careful. Should the moment overtake her, she at least has the common sense and the good parenting to be ready and protected.
Yeah. All right. I'm ready to hear from the nicest mean guy I know, Chris Martin.
If I was this guy, I would tell my wife about it and then go hide in the basement. Simple as that.
Coffee in my nose.
Because I don't want to deal with it at all.
Okay. Real simple. I got two things about this. Number one, this goes back to my continued point of we parents don't talk to our kids about sex like we pretend to. We really don't. Hence the reason why sometimes in school, sex education is important, because we have a lot of parents that don't talk to their kids about it. This is a case in point right here. Number two, hey, daddy, why don't you just be like, yes, I'm so excited. My daughter has condoms. That's a good thing, isn't it? Would you rather her not have the condoms?
Right on.
You know what I mean? Now, as far as what you're going to do and if you should talk, well, first of all, dad, she's 16. Have you not had the discussion about sex with your 16-year-old daughter? Because that's a problem in itself. I think that maybe you should have this discussion. So maybe instead of saying, hey, I found condoms, why don't you take this time, you and your wife, and say, you know what? Let's talk about sex with our daughter. It's really not as taboo as you think. Nick, what do you got?
Well, I was thinking this is a very close relationship, this father-daughter relationship. I can understand they want to keep it light, positive, but and it is really uncomfortable thing to share if you find some condoms in the car. Maybe keep it confidential under the curtains for now. Maybe wait till she gets older, tell her about what you found. Maybe chalk it up for now as an undercover investigation.
Secret agent man. Secret.
I mean, we could talk about it maybe later down the road, but I mean, it's kind of fresh right now. Let it pass for now. We'll bring it up later.
Oh, Nick.
Nick, you really do have an old soul, bro.
Yep,
I take that as a compliment, my friend.
Yeah, yeah. Any parting words you got on this one, Spike?
The only troubling thing in that entire scenario was, hey, I bought the car, I've got the right to look. You're the dad. I don't care who paid for the car. I don't care if she worked 7-8 after-school jobs and she paid for the car. You're still her dad. That's still your little girl, and safety matters.
Do you really have the right to snoop on your kids?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
I kind of agree. Hey, coming up next, agree to disagree. Oh, yeah. That comes up next. And the first topic is going to be about Snohomish County. We'll do that next. G and Ursula with Spike O'Neill.